listening to Augmented Advertising, the Future of Marketing Technology, a podcast from Advertising Week. In each bi-weekly episode of Augmented Advertising, we journey through the cutting-edge realms of VR, AR, AI, and beyond. Join us as we delve deep into the world of emerging technologies and their transformative impact on the advertising landscape. This week on Augmented Advertising, we speak with John Mora, Chief AI Officer at Zephyr. John discusses the symbolic and practical implications of his still rather unique title and generative AI's role in this year's election, both good and bad. We hope you enjoy the show. John, welcome to the show. I'm so pleased to have you on today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you're Chief AI Officer at Zephyr. And before we dig into this amazing title you have, which is a first for me to talk to a Chief AI Officer, for the uninitiated, could you please explain what Zephyr is and what you do there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are a technology company focused on brand safety and suitability within the walled gardens, as well as programmatic targeting on YouTube. So basically, our customers are large brands who want to understand the context in which their ads are showing. This is contextual. So we work with TikTok, Meta, and YouTube. So on TikTok, it would be the video before and after. On YouTube, it's the video your ad's against. On Meta, it's the post before and after. And make sure that it's in the right context, whether that's in pre-bid targeting or post-bid verification.
Chief AI Officer, that's a new one for me, like I said. What are the symbolic and practical implications of that title? I got to think that's something we're going to be seeing a lot of in the coming years. But, you know, as I said, for me, you're the first. So what does it all mean?
So maybe I'll start with like a brief history of how I got here, because I think that that'll kind of sum up as to what I'm doing now and what the title means. So I've been in machine learning for decades now. I started my career in the life sciences. So I did PhD research and understanding deep brain structures and how they change over time during Alzheimer's disease using machine learning. I did my own company doing machine learning and radiation oncology. And prior to this role, I was actually the director of data science at eHarmony, where I oversaw all the machine learning and data science efforts there. So I've had a wide variety of roles in the machine learning and AI space, and it's really culminated with my current job at Zephyr. So I've been at Zephyr almost 8 years. I've had a number of different job titles at Zephyr, but they've all been centrally around AI, around ML. We've been using AI here for, since 2017 really is when we started it. And what's happened is our models have gotten better, our processes have gotten better. And as I've been promoted to this Chief AI Officer, it's really just cementing the fact that this is a core competency for our company. So externally, I think it's more signaling to the market, but internally, it hasn't changed a lot. You know, we've used AI to understand YouTube, like I said, since 2017.
Being that you've been in the AI space at Zephyr for this long, one of the things I'm dying to know is how has your strategy, both personally and at Zephyr, evolved in that time? And in particular, how has it changed with the shift in interest in the industry? You know, we've had, you know, quite a few big sort of disruptions, to say the least, in the past couple of years, you know, ChatGPT, et cetera, et cetera. How have those things informed and altered your path along the way?
Well, this is great. So we use AI because we have to. I feel like especially recently, there is this influx of people who do AI as a product or AI because it's hot. We do AI because we have to. Going back to 2017, my mandate at the time was to understand YouTube. We were just working with YouTube. And we tried using keywords. We tried making long lists of keywords to categorize YouTube videos into various topics, and it worked okay. But at the end of the day, it missed so much nuance. So we started our AI journey because it was the only thing we could do, right? We had to do it. Back then, we used simpler models, like stuff like gradient boosting machines, random forest, and then we moved over to neural networks, which is the foundational models upon which everything today is built. We use mass human review to really understand content. And really what happened in 2022 when ChatGPT was released is it democratized access to these tools. So prior to then, you had to have special knowledge, special training to get access to these tools and really make use of them. But now all of a sudden, you could type in a chatbot and type in a text box and have AI respond to you. One of the things that we noticed internally is that what this does is it allows a number of both internal and external use cases. For internal use cases, these large language models are really good at understanding general purpose language. And so we've been able to do faster annotations, better annotations, understanding content in different languages more robustly using these large language models. And then externally, we've been able to do mass summarization. So there's a new product we rolled out recently called the Trending Content Report, which is basically a RAG implementation on top of a customer's data. And this allows very fast summarization of content. So our customers can make strategic decisions based on the content that's adjacent to their ads.
I've read so many different figures as to how much content is coming out on YouTube, let alone on an Instagram or a TikTok. You know, every day, you know, some millions and millions of hours or whatever it is. I assume that one of the reasons AI is so important as a tool for everybody to be using is just because there's so much content out there. You know, there's not enough humans on the planet to monitor all the content all the humans on the planet are making. And we're certainly, you know, can't be trusted to police ourselves. That would be, you know, forget that. How does it help combat things like, you know, misinformation? And I want to eventually fold this into, you know, we're in an election year. I mean, that's, let's kind of shelve that for a second. But what are the best practices that marketers can be using to keep brands safe and away from content that is misinforming the public?
Yeah, you know, I think we should start by acknowledging this is a hard problem, right? Misinformation is always moving. It's changing every day. And just keeping on top of what is true and even defining what is true is non-trivial to do. So we thought about this problem. We've been thinking about this problem for a while. And I like to tell this story that in 2021, we got some knowledge that the Global Alliance for Responsible Media, or one of the industry bodies that sets the classification standard for brand safety, was going to add misinformation. And my boss at the time came to me and said, John, how would you do it? Because up until then, we had humans annotate content with specific policy in mind. So is this adult content? Is this crime? Is this whatever? And then we train machine learning models on top of it. And that doesn't really scale to misinformation, because I can't expect an annotator to know what's true. I don't even know what's true all the time, right? So this is really a journalistic endeavor, if you will. And I said, well, the way that I would probably do it is I would establish truth via some third-party trusted organization. You know, this organization emanates truth, whatever that means. And I'll come back to that in a second. And then I would ingest a whole bunch of truth that they publish and not truth. We train a machine learning model on top of that, and I would apply that model to the data we see every day. And I'd say that's probably the best that I would do, and it would take a while to build. And during our diligence thinking about this, we came across a company called AdVerify that did literally that. I remember the first time I met the CEO of AdVerify, it was like a melding of the minds. I had this map of how I built it. He said how he built AdVerify, and I was like, kind of sort of exactly what I would have done. It was really synergistic in that way. So we did end up acquiring them, and they decided that their source of truth, which we fully support, are entities that come from the International Fact Checking Network. So this is third-party networks of global fact checkers that, like I say, just publish facts, and they partner with various organizations to make sure these facts are public. And what you then need to do is be able to expand upon these facts. There's never enough facts to check everything. So what we do is we train models on top of these facts, but then we also look for different ways that we can define misinformation. So for instance, we are in the process of rolling out a new computer vision model, which detects not only is the image AI generated, because we firmly believe that all AI generated images are not misinformation, especially if they're marked as such in the platform, but if it is displaying a political figure or a celebrity doing something that they did not do, then that would be misinformation. So we're rolling out a detector from that. And then the other thing that we're making heavy use of is a brand new technology called vector databases. And so this is a new technology which allows you to do semantic search. So basically, say, given two ideas, how close are they? And this turns out to be really, really effective to uncover new trends in our data. And so you asked for best practices. Best practices when thinking about misinformation are really working with third parties that have integrations like these fact-checking networks that can state, that can talk about their source of facts and how they expand upon that to meet the scale you need, and then working with first-party and third-party tools that allow you to change your campaign to effectively avoid the misinformation that's most pertinent to you.
Back to now the fact that it's an election year. I mean, and it's funny. This is kind of a multi-part question, but for starters, how do you see Zephyr's role in 2024's presidential election?
I think that what we need to be able to do is make sure that brands fully understand the content that they're supporting, right? And it's a hard task. And so what we've done to start to understand that is take this idea of misinformation and break it down. Misinformation is frankly just too broad. And it has all kinds of different flavors. Like we talked about image misinformation, but there's other things, you know, we're still working on this name, something like a cheap fake where it's a real image, but taken in a different context, right? And then really making sure that we don't have a partisan lean. We're not trying to lean one way or the other, but we are trying to make sure that we can have a fact database that represents as much truth as possible and make sure that content is graded fairly. An interesting one I came across in prepping for this is that we have a team, that we have both automated tools to pull in facts as well as a policy team that goes and searches facts. While they don't do journalistic work per se, they do find trusted sources and add to our fact database. And just recently, a cheap fake came up of that saying that Kamala Harris was involved in prostitution recently based on an image that wasn't of her. And we have to make sure we are aware of, we catalog, and then we action upon.
You've been in this space for a while now. So you've seen a few election cycles at this point, you know, presidential election cycles. And this may just be me. It may be my fatigue with misinformation as it relates to presidential elections, or it may be real. I'm not 100% sure. So I'll ask you, how does this one compare in your experience to 4 years ago or 8 years ago in terms of the amount of misinformation out there and our ability as an industry to cope with it?
Yeah, I think it starts from the fact that generative tools are more accessible. And because I want to be clear that generative AI has existed for a long time. You know, you can go back, and when I was studying, we studied stuff called general adversarial networks, whereas ways to generate images that looked real-ish, not as real as they do today, right? And it wasn't as accessible as it was today. So that's the first thing to acknowledge, is that it's just so much bigger, right? And so you have to have a different set of tools. No longer is manual review of any real amount of content going to get you far towards detecting all misinformation. You have to be able to expand and expound upon your review process using machine learning. I mean, that is the right tool for the job, because at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're making probabilistic or probably correct assertions on what something is. And this is the state of the art. And as far as detection goes, you have to continuously update your models and continuously update your data with whatever's out there, right? I can't be in the business of predicting what the next misinformation trend will be. I don't think anyone can, but I absolutely am in the business of detecting it fast and then making sure that our models either already understand it because we train on stuff like it, or that they're updated fast so that our customers can be made aware of whatever the next trend is.
Yeah. Actually, on that note, one of the things I've been curious about that I've been seeing, or rather hearing more and more, and as an audio guy, this naturally sort of piques my interest, is the sort of rise of sort of deep fake audio, voice emulation and things like that. Is that something that you guys are seeing more of? And if so, is that also, you know, things that you're getting prepared to tackle or already tackling, or, you know, have a plan to?
So, yeah. So deep fake audio is hard. It's, you know, a lot of the state of the art is around this idea of transcription. And frankly, when you do transcription and do analysis, you know, deep analysis on the transcribed text, you can get most of the way there, but it's far from perfect. And in fact, we've seen a lot of transcription algorithms specifically choose not to transcribe controversial words. I'll use that, right? And so because of that, if you don't use the raw waveform, it's hard. And so this is an active area of research for us. I was actually at a trust and safety conference last week where I saw companies like Roblox who open sourced a new transcription model a new audio understanding model in trust and safety. And so these are things that we're actively exploring right now. Because while we do see some rise in it, I will say that we see more on the computer vision side, so on the imagery, than we have on the audio to date. But it's certainly going to increase.
As these things evolve, what are you doing to ensure that your models remain effective and are, you know, remain accurate, I guess? I mean, yeah, you know, again, going back to the amount of content out there exponentially growing all the time, it just feels overwhelming to me. Granted, I'm not on the front line, you are, but I don't really envy you that. How do you prepare for all of this? And, you know, and I think further to that, what does your role as chief AI officer look like in, let's say, 5 years?
Oh, gosh, that's an interesting one. So let's take it one at a time. So how do we prepare? We prepare by making sure that we have the right processes to detect things like what we've already seen. So, for instance, a new misinformation narrative, it will come out between now and the election, probably more than one, right? But we understand that our playbook is pretty straightforward, right? We have to detect it. So we have to detect it. Then we have to make sure that it is, in fact, misinformation. So labeling content either through IFC and partners or through our own internal team, retraining our model and redeploying our model. So that's like a playbook that we follow. And as long as we have really good data ingestion techniques, so we have deep integrations, and then we have the ability to surface this content and label it, I feel confident that when this happens, we will detect it, we will either deploy a new model or show that our current model understands it, and then we'll iterate. So I think that's really important. And the other thing that we're always doing, especially in the data science department, is we're keeping on track top of the state-of-the-art research. You know, I feel like not a day goes by when I don't see another Llama variant released. I mean, obviously, Facebook just released Llama 3.1405B. And what we see is this: these models are amazing, but they're incredibly compute intensive. Like even Facebook itself could not run that model on all content on Facebook, right? So it's like we have to work within the bounds that we live in and say, okay, how do we take these large investments and distill them down into something that Zephyr can use? As far as where my role is going to go, I think that Chief AI Officer is going to be a dual role between research, so keeping on top of the current state of the art, and then implementation, and then making sure that we understand the quality of our models, right? So I already talked about the research component. It's reading papers, it's attending conferences, it's all that kind of stuff. And then the implementation is even the tools, the backend tools for hosting all these models are changing all the time. And so making sure that we're staying on top of that with the latest hardware and software is important. And then really the last one is this quality one. I feel like we're in such a hype cycle right now that no one's taking a step back and saying, how good are these models really? How do we know that Llama 3.1 is better than the latest Mistral, that's better than Gemini or whatever the case may be? And so I think a lot of my role is to make sure that at least in our domain, we're making provable progress. So every time we do an update, we can say, hey, it hasn't gotten worse at this. Or if it has gotten worse at something, it's gotten so much better at everything else that this is a worthwhile update. So those are always been my North Stars throughout my whole career. And I don't see that changing into the future.
That's a great answer, to be quite honest with you. I mean, you know, and not only that, I mean, I was sitting here, I was thinking this entire time, you know, in our industry in particular, especially the creative side of it, there was a lot of fear early on with people, you know, worrying about, you know, hey, I'm going to lose my job. You know, AI is going to come for my job. The role of chief AI officer, I mean, that seems like a pretty safe one for the foreseeable future. You know, you're not going to get replaced by AI until AI figures out AI. And then, you know, you're probably still pretty safe for at least a little bit.
You know, who knows? We'll find out.
Yeah. John, this has been great. I appreciate you taking the time to be on the show. If people want to find out more about Zephyr and what you're doing there, and, you know, I think, you know, experience, I think for themselves, what Zephyr can be doing for them, probably more importantly, where would they go?
Yeah, so you could find out all the information you need at our website, zefr.com. There you can get in touch with our sales team that can definitely help you get set up, whether it's pre-bid targeting or post-bid verification. We got solutions for that. If you want to get in contact with me, search me up on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way to get into contact with me, and I'd be more than happy to connect with anyone and talk about what we're doing with AI here and its impact on society at large.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider subscribing on your podcast platform of choice and leaving us a positive review. And be sure to check out Advertising Week's full roster of podcasts for the advertising, marketing, and technology industries at www.advertisingweek.com.